This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Swinging a high drive into center field. Hits at the wall. It is gone! Passes does it again.
Again.
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back! It's gone! Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Welcome back to Play Tessie. It is episode 148. If you're listening on drop day, it is November 7th. This is the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. Before we get going, hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening and wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe. It helps everyone out. When you subscribe, you, me, all of us. So subscribe, rate us 5 stars. Really appreciate it. As always, you can find us on YouTube on the WEEI channel. Find the videos, find the Play Tessie playlist, hit the thumbs up on the videos. You know the drill. And we're on the socials at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. So I'm here with Sammy and I'm here with Pat. And last time you heard from us, we were talking to Keith Folk. The time before that, we were talking qualifying offer decisions. And when we talked, we started the show by like lightly glossing over the Nick Pivetta qualifying offer decision, because the three of us agreed that we wouldn't offer him the qualifying offer. And for those of you that don't know what the qualifying offer means, what it does, when players become free agents, they're eligible to receive a qualifying offer so long as they haven't received it in the past and they were not traded in the middle of the season. If they receive a qualifying offer, it's for 1 year and $21.05 million. If they get it, they can either take it, and that's their contract, 1 year, 21 mil, or they can decline it. But if they decline it, then the team that they sign with has to give up a draft pick depending on how much they spent in the prior year. For most teams, that would be a second-round pick. And the team that offered him the qualifying offer, in this case, the Red Sox, would get a pick depending on how much they spent. And in the Red Sox case, it would be a pick at the end of the second round if Nick Pivetta is to decline the qualifying offer and go sign with another team. So when we last spoke, none of us thought Nick Pivetta were going to get it. We almost didn't even, like, we debated whether we should even talk about it.
We named the episode after Tyler O'Neill anyway.
Yeah.
Because we thought that was a much more... By the way, in defense of all of our collective credibility, nobody
Zero.
Thought Nick Pivetta was going to get the qualifying offer. I listened to the other Red Sox podcasts. None of them. None of the reporters. Nobody. So please don't question us.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's certainly not an us thing. Zero people. Like, if I had seen people, anyone at all, predicting that the Red Sox were going to offer Pivetta the qualifying offer, I certainly would have had us go more into depth. With the Tyler O'Neill one, there were people, like, I thought they should have done it. If they were going to offer it to Pivetta, though, I don't think I would have been comfortable offering two, because if they both accept it, then that kind of hamstrings your offseason. But I would have done it with O'Neill and not Pivetta, and we can get to your guys' reactions, but my initial thought on that was, if Tyler O'Neill accepts the qualifying offer, I can live with that, because the Red Sox need a right-handed bat. They need right-handed power. They need someone to slot into that DH spot if they are to unload Masataka Yoshida's contract this offseason. So if Tyler O'Neill accepts it, yeah, you're overpaying a little bit, but at least you're getting something you need. Now, if Nick Pivetta accepts it, and this is why it's such a risky maneuver to offer it, if Nick Pivetta accepts it, you've now got 5 starters. So either you're going into the season with the same rotation as last year, but you just add Lucas Giolito, which I think all of us would agree would be a huge, huge disappointment. That's option one. Option two is to sign or trade for a starter and go into the year with 6 starters, have ultra depth, which sounds great on paper, but the five guys you've got in the rotation already are five established big league starters. Like, none of these guys are guys that are going to want to be in a bullpen role or risk going to a bullpen role if everyone stays healthy. It's not going to go over well. The other option would be to either go out and flip Nick Pivetta or pay down some of his money to flip Nick Pivetta or trade Cutter Crawford, maybe Tanner Houck, but I'll say likely Cutter Crawford. It's risky. It's risky because if you, and I'm rambling, but if Nick Pivetta takes this qualifying offer and the Red Sox aren't prepared to go over the tax, you have just hamstrung your entire offseason and you're relying on other teams helping you to get better. And that is a scary place to be. But that said, if he declines it, good for Craig Breslow. You read the market better than anyone else if that happens.
Yeah, good ramble. That wasn't not bad at all. Do you guys want Pivetta to accept or decline? Because everybody automatically says no, they don't want him to accept. But if Cutter Crawford's a trade chip, that might make things a little bit easier to acquire an ace or a right-handed bat or a closer, something. One of the needs, one of the many needs that the Red Sox have. So I'm very much stuck in the middle on this. I personally kind of hope he declines so the Red Sox get that draft pick and then they can fill that top spot in the rotation and have less moving parts in this offseason. But I don't think it's the end of the world if he does accept it. The money means almost nothing to me. It's a one-year deal, so it's off the books after 2025. And it's not like Nick Pivetta is a bad pitcher. He's certainly not. He's a legitimate major league starter. Yes, we had higher hopes for Nick Pivetta than what we got in 2024. No, that does not mean he's not a valuable piece to have. So I guess where I'm at right now is what I just said. While I'd rather him decline it, I don't think it's the end of the world if he accepts it.
I'm in the camp that I can't sweat this decision for 2 weeks. I can't, because it's crazy that this one decision does actually kind of change the outlook of the offseason that drastically. Because there's two things here. Sammy, you mentioned it. If he does opt in all likelihood, it's Cutter on the block. Sure. Awesome. Cool. Whatever. What does change is that if they're trying to stay under that first luxury tax, before he accepts it, I believe the number is $65 million. There's $65 million under that first luxury tax. Cutter is still pre-arbitration. So the money swap is huge. So regardless, if they move Cutter, they are still right around that $40, $45 million under the tax. That is an ace. And then a kind of bargain bin right-handed bat without even addressing the bullpen. That scares me because I don't think that number is enough to address all your holes. Ideally, the guys like Morosi, Heyman, Feinsand, these guys are right. Ideally, their teams licking their chops at his advanced numbers want to work with him so badly that they will give him that 3 years, $18 to $20, $21 million a year, and he does opt out. And if Craig knew this, if Breslow knew this, that there were teams that were going to say, you know what, fuck it, give him the pick, I want to work with this guy. He read the market better than anyone in the entire league did, which is incredible. Because then, you don't have Nick Pivetta for $20 million. Great. Awesome. You have the four slots. You have the top one spot open, whatever. You also get a pick. So if you go and then sign Burns, Freed, a guy with a QO attached, you're net even on draft picks.
Yeah, it opens up doors. All. It opens up doors.
Absolutely.
But yeah, so that's why, like, I think the initial reaction, especially in my own head, the initial reaction was, I don't want to say anger, but like disappointment that they did it. But
it's like confusion, I feel.
Yeah, a lot of confusion. Yeah. But as Pat referenced, a lot of the national media have come out and said, even in wake of the qualifying offer, that Pivetta has a surprise. Like Morosi's quote was, his market is, quote, surprisingly strong. So
why do we do this? We do this every year. I swear to God, we do this every single year at the beginning of the offseason. Everyone is always shocked at the prices of starting pitching. Like, wow, this guy's got a great market. How do we not see it coming? It happens every single year. So I would be surprised now with the qualifying offer if Pivetta's got an unbelievable market. But without the qualifying offer, that's a legit major league pitcher. He's not that old. He's got some upside. We've talked about the stuff, and people hate to hear that, but the stuff is nasty. Of course he's got a good market. That was confusing to me why people were confused. I was confused regarding the confusion.
the thing is, so you can't react. I kind of sense it from you guys too, but you almost can't react. And his deadline to make a decision is November 19th. So we've got a little less than 2 weeks to go until that happens. But you almost have to reserve judgment, because if he declines it, then Craig Breslow and the Red Sox saw something in the market that none of us saw. And I think after last year, seeing them completely misjudge the Yoshinobu Yamamoto market, it would be a welcome development if the Red Sox are now reading markets and using it to their advantage. But if he accepts it, we also still don't know if we should be upset or not, because if them offering this qualifying offer signals that, hey, ownership is giving you the go to spend a ton of money so you can take a risk like this, knowing that he can accept it and it's not going to hold the rest of your offseason back, then that's also a good thing. What is not a good thing and would be completely unacceptable is if ownership isn't going to let you go over the first luxury tax line, you don't know that Nick Pivetta is about to reject the offer, and that if he accepts the offer and that now holds you back with what you can do financially. Pat talked about it where, yeah, if you want to sign an ace, go for it. But guess what? Now you're right up to the tax line. You haven't even addressed the bat. You haven't even addressed the bullpen. That can't happen. So if he accepts it, I'm going to be looking right at you, John Henry, because I'm going to need the Red Sox to that budget. Poof. Like, I'm going to need the Sox going over the luxury tax line if Nick Pivetta is here, unless the follow-up move is to trade Nick Pivetta's one-year $20-something million deal elsewhere. Because even if they do trade Cutter Crawford, like, he's only going to be making around $4 million next year. It's not going to help them salary-wise.
So, by the way, we have to add that budget is a self-imposed budget. Again, there is no salary cap in baseball. Only ownership can impose a salary cap, which is what the lovely Red Sox front office has done as they've missed the playoffs in 5 of the last 6 years, which has been great. Gordo, I want to go back to something you said. If Nick Pivetta does accept the qualifying offer, or even if he doesn't, just the fact that they're ballsy enough right now to be making this a possibility, do we think this points to more spending?
I don't know, because they could be so, if they are 100% sure that he's going to decline it, it implies nothing. But if there's a chance that he's going to accept it, and I think there is a chance that he accepts it, you'd have to hope yes, but I wouldn't put it past them to offer it and hope for the best and think that they can adjust even with a budget. And that's a scary world to me. You got to get creative.
Hope for the best is like the motto of the Red Sox the last 6 years. Let's hope for the best.
Yeah. The thing is, Pat.
Sorry, I was going to say, I think that does kind of indicate that they're willing to spend. Because $20 million for number 4 or 5 pitcher last year, that's not happening. They didn't even give, like, that Giolito money, he was supposed to be, like, the number 2. They're giving this for a guy they know is a number 4 or 5. That points to me, okay, we're going to spend money. The other side of it is, and I don't know if we'll get to it, but the agents are saying they're giving every indication that they want to add elite talent. A year ago, Scott Boras was saying that Craig Breslow was throwing rolls of quarters at him for Teoscar Hernandez. Like, what are we doing? Like,
don't, Pat, you bring up a good point there. That is what's different. We'll get to this a little bit later in the episode, but there are indications that they're ready to spend, and a risk like this kind of does, in most worlds, imply it. I have a question, because Sammy, you brought up before that you weren't quite sure whether you wanted him to accept or decline, because you want them to be open to a world where they trade Cutter Crawford.
Well, I'd prefer he decline, but I just don't think it's the end of the world if he accepts.
Okay. Yeah. But even if he does decline, what, because Nick Pivetta on this qualifying offer would make $21 million. What would stop the Red Sox if they are willing to live with the risk of Pivetta being on the team for $21 million, trading Cutter Crawford, and then signing an ace or trading for an ace? If he declines, what would stop them? Like let's assume that the Cutter trade would be for Garrett Crochet, who, by the way, Buster only today, or actually it might have been yesterday. It was a day late surfacing on the web. You're welcome, people. But Buster only said that he thinks that Garrett Crochet is definitely going to get traded, and the two teams that he has his eye on there are the Mets and the Red Sox. So yeah. Let's say Cutter Crawford goes in that trade. If Pivetta declines, what stops the Red Sox from taking that $21 million and saying, okay, Jack Flaherty, like we're going to give you a four-year deal worth $21 million a year, and then all of a sudden your rotation, like how can start opening day, but then it's Hauk, Crochet, Flaherty, Bayo, Giolito. That's like one of the best rotations in the sport. Like I don't think Nick Pivetta has to accept the qualifying offer for Cutter Crawford to be a potential part of a Garrett Crochet trade.
I agree. It's a hell of a rotation you just outlined. I would probably cry tears of joy. Part of the reason I said I don't mind if Nick Pivetta accepts it is because I think that if Cutter Crawford is moved, it would be in a big trade with the White Sox to acquire Garrett Crochet, who is on a similar contract that doesn't really hurt you much at all in the way of the luxury tax, which, again, is self-imposed. We shouldn't have to care about this, but here we are. We are well aware at this point that we do have to care about it. As far as that scenario where Pivetta comes back, what was it? Pivetta declines, I mean, and then they also trade Cutter. I think that's, I mean, obviously that's less likely because it's more moves happening, but I mean, it's not out of the question. It would be, that would be like the 2012 era Red Sox kind of move, which was, you know, those years, 2013, 15, 16, 17, 18 were a lot more successful than what we've seen lately. So certainly wouldn't hate it. I think their rotation is going to be pretty much the same as last year with one big change.
I think I agree with you just because I think there's a good chance that if the Red Sox want to get, like, I think that there's a better chance that the Red Sox either sign one of those aces, the Snell or Fried type guys, or trade for Crochet, but it takes a big four prospect, meaning Cutter Crawford is not included. Because for Cutter Crawford to be included, you're building up with other pieces so you don't have to include a big four. Like, I don't think you're trading a big four guy and Cutter to get Crochet.
Agree. I mean, if you can get away with like Willier Abreu, Cutter Crawford, and like Blaze or Cespedes, one of those like good but not great prospects, that would be fantastic. I just foresee, and we're going to dig deep into like the Garrett Crochet trade scenarios at some point. We keep teasing this. It's coming. Don't worry. We're going to talk a lot about it. I think that would be great. I just feel like there's going to be so many teams in on Crochet. He's so attractive as a piece that you can add. 25-year-old ace caliber pitcher with 2 years of team control who wants to be extended.
That's the key. He wants to be extended. That is what sets him apart from every other trade candidate.
That's why he's so popular. I would love, not that I don't like Cutter or Willier Abreu. I think they're both great players, but if you can get a guy like Garrett Crochet for those guys and a few of your mid-tier prospects, fantastic. I can't fathom that happening. I think it's going to have to come at the price of one of your big four prospects. So
I want to push back a little bit because I don't think that you're giving enough credit to the player that Willier Abreu already is in Major League Baseball. He's got 5 years of control, just finished his rookie year. He's very thick. The best defensive right fielder in the AL. He is a Gold Glover. He's a good base runner, and he mashes right-handed pitching. The one flaw in his game is that he hasn't quite figured out lefties yet. But being on a team like the White Sox, like he'd have every opportunity to figure that out. And obviously, if he learns to hit lefties even a little bit, like, I know it's kind of weird to label him like this because he wasn't like a big prospect. But if Willier Abreu learns how to hit left-handed pitching even a little bit, like that's a star player right there. And he has 5 years of control left. So that is a really, really, like, if you're the White Sox, call me crazy. Willy Abreu's trade value is, I think, on par with maybe not every member of the Big Four, but with one or two of them. It's right there.
Maybe, that's tough. That's such a tough call. Man, but oh God, that would be depressing to see Willy Abreu in a White Sox uniform in that empty stadium losing 13-1.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I don't know. It really depends on how the White Sox view Willy Abreu. Because how many guys have we seen? Remember Chris Coughlin? He won Rookie of the Year with the Marlins in 2008 or 9, was not a top prospect, and then fell off a cliff right after that. So when you don't have that top prospect pedigree that our good friend Bradfo has told us time after time, teams care about that. I just don't know. I don't know if we have our Red Sox goggles on or what, but like, yes, great player. I just don't know if it's enough to get a horse like Garrett Crochet if you're just also including Cutter and then a mid-tier guy. We'll see. I hope I'm dead wrong.
I also think that saying Willy Abreu's bad at hitting left-handed pitching is wildly underselling it. He's horrendous at hitting left-handed pitching. I just pulled up the numbers.
It's bad.
Against righties this year, 14 home runs, 53 RBI, 266 average, 825 OPS. Those are damn respectable numbers. That's a really good, productive corner outfielder. Against lefties, one home run, 5 RBI.
What's the at-bats?
He had almost 70 at-bats. 180.
Costas was bad against lefties. Devers wasn't good against lefties when he came up. I'm not super worried.
Here's the thing.
OPS.
It's bad. It's bad. But this is a guy who, when he plays, doesn't feel like he was a rookie. But he was a rookie. Like, as Sammy said, like you would see the Red Sox build in restrictions, not letting Costas, Duran, Devers, guys like that face lefties. They did the same with Willier, and it feels a little bit more like it was for a reason more than just protecting him. Like with Costas and Devers, it felt like, oh, I'm just protecting them. I'm going to give them good matchups while they find their footing in Major League Baseball. With Willier, it was that, but also it was like, if this guy faces a lefty, like he's going to get out. I want to make sure we have time to talk about Tyler O'Neill and a couple of the other things coming out of the GM meetings that are ongoing as we record this podcast, but leave you with one question that I'm going to ask you guys about Nick Pivetta. Would you rather Nick Pivetta accepts the qualifying offer and is the same pitcher that he's been for his Red Sox career, low fours ERA, every fifth day? Would you rather he do that?
I know where you're going with this.
Or would you rather he leave and become this offseason's Seth Lugo for another team?
I sniffed that one out from a mile away, Gordo. That's an evil question to ask.
Yeah.
I'd rather him decline it and go somewhere else and be Seth Lugo. Just Red Sox get better, period. If he goes to the Astros and he's great, or the Rays and he's an opener with a 0.1 ERA, I don't give a shit. Just make the Red Sox better first and first mostly. I don't even know if that's a term, but I'm going to use it anyway.
Pat, what about you?
Yeah. I mean, it's a non-answer, but it depends on like the counterpunch. Like if he goes he's Seth Lugo for the Astros, but we get Garrett Crochet or Max Fried or Blake Snell, I don't give a shit what he could be Randy Johnson. I don't care. Like the Red Sox got better with him not on the roster. But like selfishly, no, not even. No, I just don't want him on the Red Sox next year.
Yeah, no, that's where I'm at too. Even if they don't get any better, at least they got a pick. Like if Nick Pivetta has like a 4.2 ERA on the Red Sox next year, making $21 million, and as a result, of course, it's a lot harder for them to make the move to get an ace. Ugh. Like he can go and be Seth Lugo. I can't have another year of that. We need number one starting caliber pitchers. Let's talk a little bit about Tyler O'Neill. We talked way more about Tyler O'Neill on our episode talking about qualifying offers than we talked about Nick Pivetta. We barely talked about Pivetta. But with Tyler O'Neill, if I remember correctly, I wanted to give it to him. I definitely wanted to give it to him. I believe Pat wanted to give it to him, and Sammy was kind of on the fence, but maybe leaning towards not giving it to him.
Correct.
With Tyler O'Neill not getting the qualifying offer now, he's free to sign with any team for any contract. There's no draft pick compensation. He's represented by Scott Boras, and the free agent predictions on a bunch of platforms, I would say for the most part, have been 3 years and somewhere between $40 and $50 million. So for me, like, now that Tyler O'Neill is not coming back to the Red Sox on a 1 year deal, I'm a lot less inclined to bring him back, just because a 3 year deal for a guy whose body has not been able to stay healthy through a season is a little bit scary. And then also, not for nothing, but my white whale is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I want him to be the DH of the Red Sox for years to come. I want him to split time with Rafael Devers at first base. I want him to split time with Tristan Casas at first base. I want those three guys to be lineup cornerstones on the Red Sox for years to come. If you sign a DH for more than 1 year, yeah, I guess you could trade him, but as you're seeing with Yoshida right now, it's not always that simple. So if they sign a DH for multiple years, I'm just going to go ahead and assume that that dream is dead for me. So yeah, I want a 1 year guy. I'm fine if it's via trade. I'm fine if they overpay for the 1 year, but at this point, maybe a 2 year I'd consider, because those are a little bit easier with 1 year left. It's a little bit easier to offload. But
this episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I was a little bit disappointed it was Pivetta and not O'Neill offered the qualifying offer. And at this point, I don't know if I'm paying O'Neill the money that he's going to command to come back, even as good as he was against left-handed pitching last year.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at as well. Even though I was leaning slightly no towards Tyler O'Neill getting the QO, if I had to pick him or Pivetta, I would have gone O'Neill, no-brainer. But my issue with O'Neill is the same thing it's always been. I love the power, love that he's right-handed. Nice guy, but the strikeouts, so many of them. I feel like you can fill that kind of DH, part-time defender role with someone else. I think it's an okay fit, but not a great fit. So, no, I would not give him anything 3 years. I would give him like the Lucas Giolito style contract where it's a year and then an option. But it would have to be like a mutual option. And I don't think O'Neill would accept that coming off a 31 home run season where he stayed fairly healthy.
You could take a risk, like the Giolito thing. You could take the risk and be like, we'll give O'Neill a heavy 2 year deal and hope that he outperforms it. And if he doesn't, then it's you're stuck with the year. But
could do the Patriots, the old school Patriots move where it's like an incentive laden contract. I don't know. It's getting hairy. It's a little complicated. I would probably look elsewhere. That said, if they bring back Tyler O'Neill, I don't think anyone's going to be disappointed. Yeah. Also worth noting, the guy that everyone wanted instead of O'Neill, Gordo, you did a poll about it, I believe. Teoscar Hernandez did get the qualifying offer. So that is probably not going to happen.
Pat, I want to get your take, but Sammy, since you brought it up, I will say this. If they passed on giving Tyler O'Neill 1 year, $21 million, just to give Teoscar Hernandez a 3 year, $20 plus million a year deal and give up a pick, I'm going to be pissed. Pat, give me your take.
Yeah, a year later, too. So he's a year older, and he wanted to come here last year.
I'll be mad. But Pat, take on this. Take on them not giving O'Neill the qualifying offer, and is there a world where you would bring him back at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I made my point about giving him the QO last episode. To me, it was so obvious. You have guys on the way up. Roman at some point will be up. Braden Montgomery probably won't be too far off. Like that 1 year cushion contract, O'Neill gets paid, you get right-handed power, you have an everyday outfielder. It just lined up really, really well. And now that he's a free agent and you're looking at most likely going to have to give him 2 years, it gets hairy because not only are you giving him, let's say, 2 years, $30 to $36 million total, it really hamstrings you roster construction-wise beyond this year. Because exactly. In the second year of that deal, if he sucks next year, you have an underperforming, injury-prone $18 million outfielder while you're actively trying to play the number one prospect in baseball. While also, if they don't move off Yoshida, have an injury-prone DH who can't hit for power. Like, that is a bad, bad spot to be in. The one-year contract made so much sense on paper, especially knowing that they're really, really targeting starting pitching relievers and then, yeah, a right-handed bat. O'Neill's a right-handed bat. The strikeouts are there, whatever. But it was 1 year. You can live with that if you shore up the bullpen, shore up the pitching staff, get an ace.
Now, Pat, let me ask you something. Yeah. Let me ask you something. If you knew that they, because my answer to the, if I knew that they were giving Nick Pivetta the qualifying offer, and you obviously understand with Nick Pivetta, there is risk that he's going to accept it. If I had known that they were giving Nick Pivetta the qualifying offer, I would not have given them both the qualifying offer because if they both accept it. Yeah. Okay. So you're on that boat too. Because if they both accept it, you talked about like $60, $65 million to spend. If they both accept it, guess what? You're down to 20 to 23 mil. And you still haven't added your ace, like that's a tough place to be.
Yeah.
So here's why I don't think he's going to be back. Why I will say this. And this is understanding that at the GM meetings, the Globe reported that Scott Boras and the Red Sox have met about Tyler O'Neill. And this is coming after the qualifying offer decision. So the Red Sox have checked in on his market again. But what I will say is if the Red Sox were not going to offer him a one-year $21 million deal and he's going to command the 3 years and $45 to $50 million that, you know, the media seems to think he's going to get, if the Red Sox weren't willing to do 1 year $21 million, I promise you they're not willing to do 3 years $50. It's just, they're just not going to do it. They're just not going to do it. Their eyes are looking elsewhere, and maybe their hope is Nick Pivetta declines the qualifying offer and, you know, hey, now we can go after guys like Willy Adames, Alex Bregman, Anthony Santander, Teoscar Hernandez, and it's a net. You don't lose any picks because Pivetta declined the qualifying offer. Maybe that's their plan, but it's certainly not going to be passing up a one-year $21 million deal with Tyler O'Neill to now have to commit 3 years to him. I don't see it.
Yeah, I agree. No shot. I think it's either a pillow contract, like I mentioned, or the three-year thing is not. Pretty much no shot. Also,
yeah, if his market craters, that's the only way.
Would you really want to give a guy with that injury history 3 years of commitment?
No, I don't. I don't think I would. Pat, would you do it? I don't. I wouldn't do it. Three years at 15-ish.
Nope.
No, not with the way the Red Sox roster is. Not with where the Red Sox organization is right now. There are teams that need right-handed pop. I look at the Marlins. I look at the Orioles. Teams like that could use it. But with the Red Sox, yeah, they need it right now. But with where their farm is, I think there's a high likelihood that this is just a one-year need. Even with the guys coming up being left-handed, like with Christian Campbell and some of the other options potentially hitting free agency next year, I'll talk about Vlad every single podcast if I have to. It's a one-year need to me. I don't think it's a multi-year need.
I think he goes to Seattle, close to home.
That's true, and he was a fan. He was a fan growing up.
He's drafted I mean, they're right near Canada. When the Blue Jays play the Mariners in Seattle, it's like half Blue Jays fans. It's the weirdest thing you've ever seen. A lot of Canadian representation up there. A lot of Canadian baseball talk on this episode as well.
Yeah, it's true. Two Canadian players. Let me read you guys a quote from Craig Breslow at the GM meetings. He was talking a little bit about their search for elite talent on offense. I found this quote interesting. He said, "I don't think we've been shy about the fact that our position player group is further ahead than our pitching group. And so as it relates to upgrades, it will require really elite talent in order to upgrade the position player group in certain instances. So we'll kind of focus our attention appropriately, but we're going to engage. We're going to explore anything that we think makes us better." And I found that quote interesting. And I kind of like where his head's at because the offense long term is in a place, I think, where you basically either need a holdover for the DH for your guys coming up, or you got to chase elite, elite, elite talent. I don't like, they're not in a place right now where you should go for a guy who would hit sixth or seventh in your order, you know, a 3 or 4 year deal for a solid bat. Like, to me, that opening at DH needs to be a right-handed thumper, or in some cases like Anthony Santander, a switch hitter, a thumper who can hit left-handed pitching, who is a long-term fixture for you because he's a stud. And if you can't get that, I want to hold over so I can try to get that again next year. Sammy, you're muted.
Sammy.
Sorry. Yeah, I agree with you, Gordo. I don't want like a mid-tier guy, unless one scenario where I'd be cool with it, if the Red Sox did like a bad contract swap and offloaded Yoshida, the guy I'm thinking, Nolan Arenado, could work. He's not elite offensively anymore, but he can still hit. He makes your defense better. But if you're not going to do something like that, then yeah, I agree with Craig Breslow. You need to like get a guy. It's kind of like the rotation to a lesser degree. You need a guy. You need a guy, not just some dude. How's that for analysis? Yeah,
there you go. You need a guy, not a dude. No, you need a guy, not some dude. Dude works.
Yeah, if the guy is a dude, go get him. But if the guy's just, that's a dude. You don't want that.
No, but like the difference is a dude is good. Some dude is bad.
Some dude, yeah.
Some dude is never good.
No, you it's want a dude. A dude. Yeah. Well, I guess it's good to, back to the quote. I like hearing that they're exploring all options. It doesn't really do much for me though. I need to see it. I feel like I've been in a toxic relationship with this front office for years, despite the changes. Still the same front office, different personnel, same front office. And I've been gaslit, I've been hurt, and I just won't do it again. So appreciate the words, Craig. Let's see it.
So that's actually a very good segue into something that I tweeted about at one point today. It was following the Globe's report that agents have been saying, and Pat, you referenced this earlier, is that agents have been saying that the Red Sox are kind of ready to go and ready to be in on the top players on the markets. Alex Speer was talking about the other day about how the gossip at the GM meetings is that the Red Sox could trade for anyone. And it seems, based off of the Globe's report the next day, that they are ready to spend too. And that's what agents are saying. And when I tweeted that, the response from everyone is what has been the response from anyone. Anytime I've tweeted anything that the Red Sox have said or has been reported about the Red Sox potentially spending, which is, I'll believe it when I see it, which
show
I think
me,
is fair.
Don't tell me.
Yeah. Show me, which I think is fair. Every time that they speak, every time that Craig Breslow or Sam Kennedy says like, hey, enough's enough. Like, we're ready to go. I think that's the right response. But when the agents report it, when the agents are telling the media, you gotta remember back to last year, because we talk about full throttle so much. But last year, agents were telling reporters, anyone who would listen, that the Red Sox were not going full throttle. They actually were telling agents that, hey, like, we're interested in your guy, but we can't spend money right now. We have to offload salary if we want to sign your guy. That's different than what we're hearing now.
Yep.
What we're hearing now, I'm not saying to take off the shackles and like let yourself be free. Like, no. Have your walls up. Have your walls up, because they have not earned the right for you to in John Henry, in Craig Breslow, in Sam Kennedy, in anybody you trust. You don't trust anyone until you see it. But I actually think that this is encouraging.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I always kind of no sell the talking from anyone. But when it's coming from an exterior source and they're saying the complete opposite, not the complete opposite, but a very different tune from last year, you could say, that's a good sign. I think that's something that Red Sox fans should be markedly encouraged by. Don't go nuts. We're still not out of the woods yet. John Henry is still in charge. He is the one hamstringing the payroll. It seems abundantly clear at this point that it is one man, doing that. So, that's legitimately an encouraging development. It's just not huge, but it's real.
Pat, are you encouraged by it? How do you like where? Just raw. How does it make you feel?
So, ironically enough, I'm actually more encouraged by what's coming out of not the Red Sox about the Red Sox, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah.
You have Spear, like even Spear last year when they were in on Yamamoto, he did shoot it down, but he was like, this could quickly get out of their grasps. The market could quickly proceed, like whatever, blah, blah. He didn't shoot anything down, but he was very overly cautious. He was like, I don't think it's going to happen. You had guys say, like Heyman and Rosenthal were saying, they have to spend money, right? They must have to spend money. And then you had the agent saying, oh, they have no money. They're trying to offload money. They're not going to do anything. To then this offseason, a complete 180. You have Spear saying they can trade for anybody. They're big fish hunting. They're in the trade market. You have agents saying they're showing every inclination that they're willing to spend for top-tier talent. All of that, you have only in passing mentioning the Red Sox and Crochet. All of that speaks more to me than Craig Breslow for the 7,000th time saying we're going to pursue every avenue, explore the market, canvas the market, look to upgrade. I can't hear that anymore. I want concrete information. And what's coming from the outside seems to be concrete because it's universally saying the same thing.
So what I will say to this is I just remember last year at the winter meetings, and this is in December. This is before Ohtani signed, before Yamamoto signed, before any of that. And Scott Boras was doing his media availability, and I asked him, I said, what have your conversations with the Red Sox been like? And he kind of gave me a non-answer. And I was like, huh, that was weird, because like we were still feeling the effects of full throttle. Like we thought the Red Sox were going to do legitimate things. It was just a matter of what. And when Scott Boras kind of gave like a non-answer, I should have put two and two together and thought, oh my God, like why is the agent not using the Red Sox as leverage? And in hindsight, it was obviously because no one would have believed it, because all the agents knew that the Red Sox were not a threat. All the teams knew that the Red Sox were not a threat. This time around, it's agents, including Scott Boras, that are saying this. So again, it's put up or shut up. Like we'll believe it when we see it. But at this point, it's getting harder and harder for me to like not break the walls down. I want to break the walls down, and I'm in the process of like chipping away at it, but like also stopping myself because I don't want to like get hurt. But it's hard because
we're gonna get hurt again. It's gonna be like the Red Sox sign. It's gonna be like just Jack Flaherty.
It's gonna be Sean Manaea giving up the pitch.
I would Oh God, that makes me mad. Sean Manaea, good pitcher, but like for fuck's sake, man, I would lose it.
He's not the ace, and he has the pick attached.
Did you guys see who is a actual top 100 ranked free agent? Who, I'm not kidding, if the Red Sox sign him, I'll burn his own house down.
Yes, yes. Wait, are you talking about Kyle Hart?
Dude, yes. That came out of nowhere.
He was good in Korea, right?
Yeah. FanGraphs, what did they have him?
Whoever it was.
They had him for like 3 years, $24 million, their projection for Kyle Hart, who we got to pull up his 2020 stats. That was the only year he pitched for the Red Sox, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's the only year he pitched in Major League Baseball. He was not good. I remember one start, he was going into the start in 2020, and he had a 56 ERA. And I remember sitting down to watch the game and being like, what's wrong with me? Why am I watching this? This guy's ERA is 50 fucking six.
You want the stats?
Give me the full season, yeah.
So you're right, Sammy. 2020 was the only year that Kyle Hart pitched in the majors. He pitched four games. He started three of them, 11 innings. 21 runs, 19 of them earned, good for a 15.55 ERA. But yeah,
it's pretty good.
Any enough said from you guys before we get on out of here? I've actually got two, but I'll save mine for the last.
I got one. Does a qualifying offer kind of feel a little dirty to you guys? Because I feel like let's take Tyler O'Neill, for example. He's had a lot of injury problems 2022 and 2023. In 2024, he hits 31 home runs and plays very well overall. And now the Red Sox, like, here's, like, if they had offered it to him, they would be giving him 1 year, $21 million, which is great. But, like, if he declines that, he can either accept that and get a one-year deal, which if you're a guy who has injury issues and you just had a great season, you don't want to be taking a one-year deal. You just did that. And then the other option would be to get that multi-year deal, but you're going to get much less money because you have a pick attached to you. So I just feel like the more I think about the qualifying offer, kind of like the dirtier it becomes.
Well, they almost got rid of it in the last CBA. Like, that was one of the last things that the players union ended up conceding to get that thing across the finish line. Like, it definitely is dirty. I thought it was done for because it feels wrong.
Yeah, it's like you're suppressing their ability to negotiate. And it's not, I'm not like, my heart's not aching for these guys. Oh, you only got $21 million. But yeah. Like, it's the principle of it. And it's from the lens of like Major League Baseball money. $21 million is a lot. But if you're trying to get a contract, you want more than 1 year, 21. You want, if you're Tyler O'Neill, you just hit 31 bombs. You want 3 years, $45 million. Lower AAV, much more money overall. Something like that. So I don't know. It rubbed me the wrong way, the qualifying offer. It always has, but it's just, we're talking about it so much. I keep thinking about it. It's just so like, ugh.
It's so funny because in the past, I hated the qualifying offer because it would for the more so impact the Red Sox having to give up the pick because they were signing big free agents. And more recently, it's like, oh, it's a good thing because now they're getting the pick because they're losing the free agents and not signing anybody.
It's a good point. We look at it from the other end of the spectrum now as a small market Red Sox.
That's true. Roki Sasaki likes small market teams. Look no further.
That Boston, yeah. Fans well, even show up here? No.
No, man. God, no. They don't
come down. We're not insane. Yeah.
Yeah, no. If he gets posted, we'll talk a lot about him. Yeah.
I think. Well, that's all I got. I just wanted a virtue signal about how great of a guy I am. I'm just looking out for those poor, broke Major League Baseball players who can't seem to make any money.
Great guy. Pat, you got anything for us at the end?
Yeah. I hate it because I hate him, but we have to talk about it. Scott Boras had some certified fucking bars today.
Oh, yes, he did.
Heaters. Two. Very, very good ones. Scott Boras was asked if he anticipates Blake Snell will have a different free agency experience than last year. Scott Boras said, quote, "There's no doubt the Snelling salts created a lot of whiffs, and the market has definitely awakened."
Boo!
So good. So good.
So I read that one first. I was like, oh, damn. I was like, that's a pretty good one. Then I saw the Pete Alonso one. That is Drake's ghostwriter type. It is so good. Boras, when asked about Pete Alonso, there's been a lot of talk about this being a bear market for first baseman, but for Pete's sake, it's the polar opposite.
Oh, that's so good.
Line.
Oh, fuck off, Scott Boras.
No, Sammy, it's brilliant.
No, it is. I got another one from today. But today or yesterday.
Hit me.
On Corbin Burns, he said, essentially, he continues to be a Corbin copy of himself.
He's so good. These are my favorite.
We just need a beat behind it. That's all we need.
So the Corbin one is his usual bullshit. The Blake Snell and Pete Alonso ones, you know, he sat down last week and like wrote those down. Those are not off the top.
No, he's got a pro. He pays a legitimate writer $90,000 a year to come up with clever lines about his free agents. I want to know who's employed.
That's it.
To do that.
Eminem versus Scott Boras rap battle. I want to see it.
Scott Boras wins.
But also, like, what if he was legit rattled after he kind of had a bad year where he with what Chapman, Snell, Montgomery,
Bellinger,
yeah, those four guys who were late to sign last offseason. What if he was like, man, I gotta get my puns and my rhymes right this time. I wasn't going hard enough. That's why they didn't sign until February. It's my fault. I'm gonna bring the heat this time. You think he's maybe extra motivated?
Maybe. maybe you could. LA's, I mean, he has a ton of free agents this year, man. Like it could go beyond the lines. Like he could get his revenge in dollars too.
He could. Dude, you talk about guys who are really strapped for cash, who really need money, who I feel terrible for. Scott Boras, that poor guy. He can't even afford a McDonald's burger. Poor guy. Certainly not.
Oh yeah, this offseason is big for him. His house is on the line. The bank is going to take it if he doesn't have a good offseason. So we will see how that goes, man. So I was trying. I spend my free time putting together trades, doing stupid nonsense like that. I was trying to figure out. So Luis Robert signed like an extension that similar to the ones that Sidon Rabiela and Brian Bello signed, where it's like he's making very little money at the start of the deal, but he's making a lot by the end. But the luxury tax calculations for like the CBT, it's just the average of the deal divided by the years. So Luis Robert's CBT hit is $8.3 million every single year. But if they traded him, the team that gets him would pay him $15 million. So I was trying to figure out if that team that gets him would, if their CBT hit would be the 8.3 that it is with the White Sox, or if it's the $15 million because they're acquiring $15 million. The long story short, I asked ChatGPT, and ChatGPT told me it was 8.3, but I like did a little bit more digging, and I had a pretty good idea that was wrong. And so I asked ChatGPT, are you sure about this? Like, I think it might be this. And ChatGPT thanked me. It apologized to me. Like, that thing was like, it was basically bowing down to its superior being. I daddied ChatGPT.
You're the king of the robots.
Yeah. I daddied ChatGPT.
The daddy of the
robots.
There's
one person that can stop the robot uprising. It's Gordo.
Gordo. And John Henry's going to have to pay him to do it.
Yep.
So don't expect the robots
you
to do it.
You got an epic quest to an stop epic the one named quest. Gordo.
I like how he says it too.
An epic quest to stop Gordo from with the robots.
So many robots. I'm John Henry. I live in the sewer and I love to eat cheese.
Imagine like a John Henry in rat form.
Is John Henry hanging out with the Ninja Turtles?
I just,
you know, he's got a long tail. He's got a long tail. He's got,
you know why? You know why? I've always like jokes aside. You guys watch Arthur when you were a kid?
Yeah,
not a lot, but I did a little.
In a non-derogatory way, even when I was a little kid, I always thought that John Henry kind of looked like Mr. Ratburn, the teacher. So that's why.
That's why I like to talk like he's like a rat in the sewer.
Not that Mr. Ratburn talked like that. I mean, not to rewrite history here, but yeah, John Henry, he's a guy.
Yeah, he sure is. Yeah, some guy. Not some a guy. Dude.
No.
We got to get out of here. Before we go, Pat and I, just to pass along, we're going to be at the Pedro Martinez Gala this Friday. That gala is going to include it's going to have like a panel discussion talking about the 04 World Series. Pedro's going to be there. Big Poppy's going to be there. Veritek's going to be there. Derek Lowe's going to be there. Orlando Cabrera is going to be there. It's going to be hosted by Dave O'Brien. I think Jose Bautista and Carlos Gomez are also going to be there. So anyway, if you want to get tickets, you can get them. It's PedroMartinezFoundation.com/gala. Pat and I will be there. We'll be at the red carpet and be fun times. But yeah, you can get tickets if you want them. But that's going to be a wrap for us today on Play Tessie for episode, what is this, 148? Yeah, 148. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Remember, subscribe, rate 5 stars wherever you get your podcasts. Find us on YouTube. We're the Play Tessie podcast. On the WEI channel, hit the thumbs up on the videos. We really appreciate it when you guys do that. And you can find us on the socials at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. We'll be back in your ears first thing Monday morning. But till then, for Pat and for Sammy and for Joe, it's in the back producing. It is Gordo here for Play Tessie. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.